Howie Carr, Boston Herald columnist and radio hitman.
Howie is sort of an insidious force in this area.
By the way, do we have Howie Carr?
He's around here someplace. Where's Howie? Where is Howie?
You know Howie Carr?
Howie, where the hell are you? The legendary Howie. He's got that radio going.
We love Howie Carr, right?
Yeah.
I was referred to today as 1970s Boston.
Hey, paper boy.
It comes from the tabloid talk show stuff in Boston, and it was concocted there.
He's a good guy, isn't he, though?
It's Howie Carr.
Welcome back to the Howie Carr Show. 844-500-4242 is the number if you want to join the conversation. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, in for Howie. Hope that you are listening, even though Howie is away. Ably joined by Matt at the board. Matt, thanks for being with you. Guys are working so hard this week, doing Grace's show, doing Howie's show. You and Taylor are the best team. I really appreciate you guys.
Oh, thank you.
Well, it's a great, great team. I wanted to bring this story, and I was talking about it with Howie this morning. I don't know if you saw this story in the Boston Globe, but there's this story about this 13-year-old Everett teenager that was arrested by ICE and sent to a Virginia detention facility. And this is all you need to know about the Boston Globe and what you need to know about the media in general. When we talk about the media being in the tank for Democrats, being Democrats and working overdrive, what the media has been waiting to do since Donald Trump got elected and when he announced that he was going to have the largest deportation, mass deportation in U.S. history, what they've been waiting to do is they've been waiting to find sob stories of collateral damage, people that were scooped up by ICE, that were made to disappear, and that were somehow wronged by Donald Trump being in power and by Tom Holman and Kristi Noem, and that's who they're after, make the boogeyman. So the Boston Globe runs this story. 13-year-old boy was arrested by immigration custom enforcement agents in Everett after an interaction with members of the Everett police and sent to a juvenile detention facility in Virginia, according to his mother and an immigration lawyer. The boy's mother was called to pick up her son from the Everett Police Department on Thursday, the day he was arrested. After waiting for about an hour and a half, she was told her son was taken by ICE. "My world collapsed," she said in Portuguese, which as a mother, if your kid gets picked up, whether they're well behaved or they're a criminal thug, like you're as a mom, I can understand that you love them, that whatever, but it writes this whole story. It says the boy is a seventh grader at the Albert N. Parlin School in Everett. The teen and his family, who are Brazilian nationals, have a pending asylum case and they're authorized to work legally in the United States. And it goes on and on to portray how innocent they are. This is the young kid. How dare they take him? It's the latest, the Globe says, in a string of ICE arrests of teenagers in Massachusetts since the Trump administration launched in September what they called Operation Patriot 2.0, surging resources to the region for immigration law enforcement. They now start to talk about different teenagers that were arrested and how dare they expand ICE to target teenagers. These are innocent teenagers. He's basically the guardian angel. He's innocent. How dare you do this to this kid? But I want everyone to remember one of the reasons why crime is out of control in Washington, D.C., and what Judge Jeanine, now interim U.S. Attorney Jeanine Pirro, had to say. And she had to say that it was because of the juvenile laws in Washington, D.C. were so permissive that violent teenagers are getting away with literal physical assault and crimes and theft. And if you check the Boston Globe today, there's a new twist. There's a new twist on this innocent teenager story. The new headline, and they keep changing it, by the way, but the new headline and the headline as it ran this morning until it was updated, or I guess it ran last night when it started last night, the headline was changed to "Everett teen in ICE detention was arrested with gun and knife," officials say. Somehow they omitted from the first story. They just said he had an interaction, an encounter with police. They wanted to make it seem like police are driving around, that ICE is driving around with vans and they're abducting children and they're sending them to Virginia. These are the people saying, oh, when people voted for Trump, they thought that he was only going to be encountering an arrest. ICE was only going to be targeting people that were criminal aliens that were a threat to public safety. So they write this story to say, oh, how dare ICE and the boogeyman and the fans, they're abducting our children. They're sending them to Virginia. They're talking about this kid. He's a kid. It's a trend of teenagers being picked up. And why are they being targeted? Today, the story, which they keep changing the headline on, you can see it was updated 1 hour ago on the Boston Globe website. The story now says, a 13-year-old boy from Everett, now held in Immigration and Customs Enforcement detention in Virginia, posed a public safety threat and had a firearm and large knife when arrested, federal authorities stated Monday. There's also a post on X of the mayor of Everett, who I think is the one pushing back, and I'm going to read this from WCVB. This is their story. Everett Mayor Carlo DeMaria is reacting to a recent controversial arrest of a 13-year-old in the Massachusetts city. Last week, a juvenile was taken into custody by Everett officers and then handed over to ICE. Details were not provided by the mayor's office or Everett police. As mayor, I take my responsibility to share accurate information with residents very seriously, especially on issues that can unnecessarily upset residents if inaccurate or false information is circulating. Most importantly, I can assure all residents that the chief of police and the police department take any reported threats to safety of our schools and our streets seriously and responded swiftly to protect students and residents. Here are the facts, she wrote on X. He posed a public safety threat with an extensive rap sheet, including violent assault with a dangerous weapon, battery, breaking and entering, destruction of property, and he was in possession of a firearm and a 5 to 7 inch knife when arrested. That's the innocent 13-year-old child that the Boston Globe, first of all, they doxed him. They gave out his name. They exposed the name of a minor, number one. But number two, they want you to think that it's ICE that's in the wrong here and that it's the police department that's in the wrong here. And that's really what they're aiming to do. Number one, they're trying to make Trump and immigration enforcement look bad so that it'll be distasteful in the eyes of normal, everyday Americans. So you think that there is this conspiracy where Trump and Holman and Pam Bondi and Kristi Noem are going around and they're scooping up these innocent teenagers. They want to shame the Everett police so that Everett police won't cooperate with ICE when they have a violent offender who is foreign national. And yeah, they have a pending immigration or asylum claim, but they're a danger to the public. They want to shame the police department in Everett so that they won't cooperate with ICE, that they won't cooperate with federal immigration officials. They want to create public backlash and pressure. To what end? And the hint lies in the first story that the Boston Globe put out on this, which was they said that his mom was at the police station waiting to pick him back up because they expected catch and release. They expected that you have a violent teenager with a long rap sheet that includes violent assault, is arrested after an altercation with police in which he had a firearm and a knife, and they thought he's just going to be released. They turn him over to ICE, as I assume is required by our laws that say when a foreign national who is on asylum, when they commit crimes and they're a threat to public safety, which they were in this case, threat to public safety, then you're required. That's what the law says. And if you don't like the law, go and change the law. This is fundamentally what drives me nuts about the people on the left that just want to nullify our immigration laws, that want to nullify public safety. Go and pass a law that says that. Go and pass the law that says we think that dangerous immigrants who come into this country other than legally have a right to stay here, even if they commit acts of violence, even if they threaten the police with guns or firearm and a knife. Go ahead, pass that. Make that a law if that's what you want. Don't just say, we want to tell our police not to enforce these laws, because these are the laws that are what keep Americans safe. This is exactly the reason why Donald Trump sent the National Guard into Washington, D.C. in the first place, was because you have these juvenile offenders that are being, you know, they get a slap on the wrist, they spend 10 minutes at the police station, and their mom comes and picks them up. When in fact, they didn't come into this country through the front door. They came in under the asylum scam that has been going on so that anyone who isn't going to enter legally just has to say the magic word asylum, and it's presumed that they get to stay here. And under Biden, they got access to everything. We rolled out the red carpet. We gave them everything. Why wouldn't they stay here? But we are a nation of laws. We're a nation of public safety. And so if you're going to say that, all right, we have at least a threshold that we want to prioritize, keeping Americans safe, keeping our communities safe, keeping our cities safe, there's a reason why federal authorities are spending more time in our Democrat-run cities. And it's because the Democrats don't want to arrest the violent offenders. They want to send them home with their mom. They want to allow them to run amok in our nation's capital so that violence is the norm, so that people who are law-abiding citizens who are sending their kids to school, trying to use the public park, trying to ride on the subway or the train. It's the same thing that leads to Ukrainian women being stabbed in broad daylight. It's because there are people that we know are a threat to public safety, and yet the bias of the Boston Globe is to portray them as some innocent victim, victim of law enforcement. And sure, I am 100% committed to due process rights. I think everyone has the right to challenge their arrest, challenge the charges against them, because, you know, you don't want to have a corrupt police department bringing bogus charges against someone, trying them for murder when it was all a setup. I mean, we know why due process in the courts, and you have to have a way to be able to challenge if they're going to be corrupt police officers. And I think that the overwhelming majority of police officers and people going to law enforcement are people of character that are committed to enforcing the law. But there, as we've seen play out, the reason that Howie has a book right now is because we know that there is corruption and there are bad actors. And it's important that you have due process for when that occurs. It's very important that you have that. But when you have violent offenders who are caught by police, there have to be protections in place for the public safety. There have to be protections in place that put citizens first and that allow them to be detained, that allow them to be coordinated with ICE, that allow that our federal laws that are here to protect you and me and this entire country and our resources and our children, that's got to be allowed to go forward. And instead, you get these hit pieces from the Boston Globe who make it seem like the people that were enforcing the law and keeping people safe, that they were the problem. They're on the side of this juvenile offender and not on the side of you and me. That, I think, is embarrassing. And the Boston Globe ought to be ashamed of, for so many reasons. And now the truth comes out and we get, as we say, the rest of the story. Let me talk to you about All Family Pharmacy. While big chain pharmacies push flu shots as the only solution, All Family Pharmacy believes that you deserve options. They don't tell you what you must take. They simply make sure you have access to the medicines you want when you need them most. Order ship quickly to your door in just 2 to 4 days, and they even offer overnight shipping. Don't wait for shortages on last-minute runs to the pharmacy. Prevention is always cheaper and easier than a late-night urgent care visit. No scrambling at midnight when someone spikes a fever. You'll already have what you need at home. A small investment now saves you time, stress, and money later. Essential medications every home should stock before flu season include Tamiflu, which is proven for flu treatment and prevention, antibiotics for bacterial infections, and ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, which are trusted by thousands for illness prevention and treatment. And let's talk about biohacking. Beyond the basics, All Family Pharmacy carries biohacking products to keep your energy focus, immunity, and weight loss goals on track, so you stay ahead of the game. Methylene Blue enhances focus, sharpness, memory, supports brain health. Shamoralin supports deep sleep and recovery, key for a strong immune system. And Tirzepatide supports weight loss, appetite control, blood sugar balance, and metabolic health. Stock up now at allfamilypharmacy.com/Howie. Don't wait until the flu season knocks at your door. Visit allfamilypharmacy.com/Howie and use code Howie10 for 10% off. All Family Pharmacy makes it simple, fast, and reliable to get the medications your family needs. This is the Howie Carr Show, and I'm Aaron Chadbourne.
Howie Carr will return.
This hour of the Howie Carr Show is brought to you in part by Spooky Worlds, Nightmare New England, and Haunted Hayride, New England's largest haunted attraction on over 80 acres of fear, located in Litchfield, New Hampshire. Visit nightmarenewengland.com.
Howie Carr is back.
Welcome back to the Howie Carr Show, 844-500-4242. I'm Aaron Chadbourne in for Howie. Let's go to the phone lines. We'll take a quick call and then we'll do the poll question. George, you're on the Howie Carr Show with Aaron Chadbourne. Go ahead, George.
Yes, Aaron, very interesting to hear this blatant, outrageous globe propaganda. And then we really need to shine very bright lights on, I've seen this for years, the power and misuse of the edit. What they not only fabricate, distort, but there's also a lot of harm done in what the press, all media that are on that side leave out. You have, and they should be sued. You have with Trump down there, he clearly stated that there are some nice people among this crowd of creeps, and they leave that out. That should not be let slid.
No, I agree with you, George, and thanks for the call. And I think the thing that they do, too, and what I was highlighting, too, is they do this thing called the stealth edit, where they'll go ahead and they'll print it one way, and then they'll just change it. They'll nudge it. They'll either, like, scrub it so you didn't know they got something wrong. They're either covering for themselves, or they decide that, you know, maybe they got, like, blowback from their friends, and they try to make the headline less offensive to the beautiful people. But usually, if you look up at the URL, if you look at the internet address, you can see the original headline over there. I'm going to do today's poll question, though. Today's poll question is brought to you by Perfect Smiles. Howie had his last appointment for the year at Perfect Smiles, and it's a good thing he did, as he had two more cavities that needed to be filled. He only goes to Perfect Smiles in Nashua, New Hampshire. It's so worth the trip. Visit them today at perfectsmiles.com or call them at 603-595-6699. Matt, what is today's poll question? What are the responses thus far?
Which unfinished campaign pledge would you like to see President Trump accomplish next? Negotiate a major trade deal with China? End the Russian-Ukraine war? Root out the deep state? Require voter ID in all 50 states? Or replace the income tax with tariff revenue?
Yeah, I mean, I like all of them. I want him to do all of them. I'd like to get rid of the income tax, but I don't think you're ever going to. And especially if you look at this government shutdown over whatever they're even doing, I don't know how you get the Democrats to help you get rid of the income tax. I don't think Trump can do that by himself. And I don't think the Republicans do it through reconciliation. So I don't think you're going to get that one. But I mean, if he gets the revenues that he wants, maybe we do it. I really would like to see the Russia-Ukraine war end. But I think, you know, I want to see the deep state gone. I want cash to go wild. We were promised a lot more than we've seen so far, by the way, and I want to see what's going on there. But at the end of the day, voter ID is on the ballot in Maine this November. Maine voters have a chance to enact it. I think we should have it in all 50 states. I think it's a 80-20, 90-10 issue that most Americans think you have to prove who you are when you show up at the polls. And so I'm going to go with voter ID.
Voter ID has 49%. Rooting out the deep state is 25%, ending the Russia-Ukraine war is 12%, replacing income tax with tariff revenue has 9%, and negotiate a major trade deal with China has 5%.
See, our audience knows. Our audience knows voter ID matters. That's what they give the people what they want, and Trump has been on it from this whole time, and he's gone after the dangers of absentee voting. He knows the ways in which the system is vulnerable and vulnerable even to the lack of confidence. And the people that wrote the ballot measure in Maine, Laurel Libby is working on it. We'll have Laurel on tomorrow. We'll get her to comment on that, as well as on Janet Mills entering the race against Susan Collins. We'll have Laurel Libby joining us tomorrow. But the thing that they try to do in the referendum that Laurel Libby and her group were working on is they also put in some, you know, restrictions against the ballot drop boxes, restricting absentee for any reason, and really making it so that we have more control of the system and who is going to be there. That's the thing. That's what we want to have. We want to ratchet them back because so much happened during COVID. There were so many rules that changed without a law to allow it. There were so many, and there have been Democrat legislatures making it more and more permissive. In Maine, the ID that you can even show to register to vote can be a utility bill. It can be a student ID that you have enrolled at the community college. So if you can trick the registrar at the community college, you can go ahead and register to vote and vote in our elections here. We'll talk more about Janet Mills when we come back. This is the Howie Carr Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne.
It's Howie Carr.
Welcome back to the Howie Carr Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne sitting in for Howie today, and it is a day that my greatest fears have come true. Not that I'm worried about Janet Mills winning, because I think she's very, very easy to defeat, but I was very much looking forward to her retirement from politics. I think after the last nearly 8 years that we've had under Janet Mills and the years before that we had her as Attorney General, I was very much looking forward to her riding off into the sunset. And today it was announced formally, it was leaked and has been leaked for quite a while, but leaked accidentally by her staff on Friday and throughout the last few weeks. We've known this day was coming. Janet Mills running for the U.S. Senate, hoping that she can win the Democrat primary and take on Susan Collins next November. Joining us now on the line to discuss is Jason Savage. He's the executive director of the Maine Republican Party. Jason, Janet Mills running for Senate. She gave her rousing first commercial talking about her dad. Has she moved you? Are you ready to get on the Janet Mills bandwagon?
I am so moved right now by Janet. No, I've unfortunately been one of the Mainers who's had to live under Janet Mills' reign of destruction here in the state. And I can think of not a single reason, a single redeeming quality why anybody would want to vote for Janet Mills or her opponent over there in the primary. But here we are. You know, she started out her campaign talking about her fight with Donald Trump. And that fight with Donald Trump was about her wanting to let boys continue to compete in girls' sports and change in girls' locker rooms. And that's where she's starting her campaign is she's actually supporting the bullies. And you know, it's just wrong. And that's where we're at.
So here's a question to Jason. If we look over the last, whatever it is now, 6.5 years, almost 7 years of Janet Mills being governor, what about her record as governor would give you confidence that she would do a good job as U.S. Senator and be better at it than the current senator from Maine?
Well, you know, if you look at Janet Mills' time as governor, what you have is cost of living is out of control in Maine. Like people can barely afford to survive. The drug epidemic is ravaging our young people and a lot of different populations in every major city. Our educational outcomes are so bad that Mississippi went past us. We just had not only the highest electricity price increase in the country, but we doubled the next closest state in electricity price increases. The Chinese organized crime syndicates have put down roots, and they basically have started their little human trafficking and marijuana growing facilities all over the state, which Janet Mills hasn't done anything about. Taxes went up. Spending is out of control. Most of it's going to illegal immigrant welfare. So if that's the direction you want to take the country, then she would be a really, really great candidate for U.S. Senate. But if you want to stay on the path, you know, Maine is going in the opposite direction of the rest of the country. Like we're going into a recession while the rest of the country is experiencing economic success and prosperity. But it's kind of like either her or her opponent, they both are advocating the same prescription for what they think is wrong with the country, but it's the same things that got us here where we are in Maine right now.
Speaking of her opponent, before she would be able to take on Susan Collins, Janet Mills has to make it through a primary. And I know there are several candidates running. There's Jordan Woods. And then most recently, there's the guy, I can never remember his name, but he's a part owner of the Maine Beer Company. So you got the beer brewer, you got the former congressional staffer, you've got the socialist oyster man, Graham Plattner. He's palling around with Zoran Mamdani and Bernie Sanders on the Stop the Oligarchy tour. Graham yeah. Plattner has seemed to be gaining momentum largely because of Janet's political calculations. But doesn't this seem a bit like a proxy battle for like Schumer versus Mamdani, Schumer versus AOC? You've got the Schumer picked candidate, his protege, Janet Mills, fresh in the middle of the Schumer shutdown. Schumer pulls in. He can't be bothered to fund the government because he's busy recruiting Janet Mills to run against Susan Collins. And then you've got her running against this mm-hmm. socialist who seems to be getting on his populist message more and more people. Do you think Janet's going to make it through the primary and actually be the candidate?
Well, you know, one thing that we said this morning, and I'll say it again here, is congratulations to Chuck Schumer. You know, in a very short period of time here, he got the Schumer shutdown in effect, and then he got his handpicked candidate for U.S. Senate. I think the difference between Mills and Plattner is Mills will take us to economic poverty kind of a medium fast, and Plattner will be super fast. It's like the fast track to I don't know what it is, like just socialist destruction. So I you know, Schumer obviously thinks he's putting the more moderate candidate up. It really is a proxy war between Schumer and Bernie, and it's something that's happening around the country. In this case, you know, we just have two people who want to do it at a slightly different speed. There really isn't a great option for reasonable Democrats to choose somebody who is like an old school Democrat. You've got two people who just want to do it one slightly faster than the other.
You know, it reminds me a little bit, if we think back in history, when there was a bit of a civil war going on in the Republican Party between the Tea Party and the establishment, it was covered breathlessly. Everyone wanted to react to these Tea Party candidates that were upsetting the establishment candidates, and the media paid close attention to it. There is a much more vigorous war going on right now in the Democrat Party. They're in disarray, but they have this socialist, or as the president calls it, the communist candidate in New York City. You got the socialist wing led by the Squad, by Bernie Sanders, by AOC, represented by this Graham Plattner character. And then you've got kind of the Schumer wing. And I take it back, by the way. Schumer is 3 years younger than Janet Mills. So if you thought that Chuck Schumer was too young in the face of youth and vitality, well, he's got Janet Mills for you. She'll make him look like a young whippersnapper. So yeah, there's this battle going on, though, between the socialists and the old establishment Schumer wing of the party. But the media is saying nothing about it. They want to pretend that the Democrats are all in lockstep.
You know, it's like the media wants to go after Republicans at all costs, and they don't really care who their allies are. You know, one thing that I'll say is, it's interesting that, you know, Schumer has to recognize, I think, you know, there's some level of thought that Mills maybe can portray herself to not be as extreme as Plattner, and that probably has some truth to it. But on the other hand, we're being asked in Maine, voters are going to be asked to vote out the chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee for a freshman senator, one who either is, you know, as Janet Mills is almost 80 years or 70 something years old, or two, you know, a guy who just like seems to think that yelling and screaming is the way to get things done. I don't really understand the thinking for either one of them when you've got your senior senator is somebody with real stature, real power, and a real passion for doing things for the state of Maine. I mean, you can set aside, if we just set aside Senator Collins, like occasional disagreements with some people that, you know, maybe you cheer for, you see on Fox News, she does incredible work for the people of Maine, and the people that the Democrats are proposing to replace her don't have a hope of ever achieving that level of success and ability to work across the aisle. It's amazing to me that whether it is Chuck Schumer or Bernie Sanders, whoever the Democrat is, they go out and they say they want to work with Republicans. They want to talk to Republicans. People need to reach across the aisle. But when there is a Republican that will actually listen to them and consider, even if they disagree, they'll listen to them and consider what they have to say, they become a top target nationally. And that's what they're doing to Senator Collins.
Yeah, no, I think the points you make sometimes people don't appreciate. But I made the same argument back when Chuck Schumer recruited Sarah Gideon, who you and I both know was the least accomplished Speaker of the House in Maine history. She couldn't manage her way into a parking space, let alone manage the legislature. She was a puppet candidate. They didn't even let her speak for herself. She was she had a phalanx of little staffers following her around everywhere, telling her what words to say, where to look, how to smile, what to wear. She got busted for wearing the Patagonia vest instead of the L.L. Bean one. I mean, and that was the most substantive thing she did that whole campaign. So, but back then I said, I can't imagine Susan Collins would be in line to be the chair of the Appropriations Committee, somewhere that she could help make sure that a rural state like Maine is well represented and not swallowed up by the needs of California and New York City and the urban centers, the Democrat cities and states that would get it. You're going to pass up having the main senator that was at that time in line to, now she's actually the chair of the Appropriations Committee. So she's actually there protecting the interests of Maine. You're going to pass up the chair of the Appropriations Committee for the junior most senator in the United States. And if it's Janet Mills, she's probably only got like one term in her, maybe, if she lasts to the end of it. So we are always going to, you're going to have at least a decade of having the most junior senator in the Senate, which does matter when it comes to seniority and representing your interests, because the Senate cares about seniority. So I can't imagine doing that. But then to your point of what they're actually getting in that person they would have, it just doesn't make sense.
No. And look, Senator Collins is somebody who in Washington, D.C., I bet there is not a phone that she could call in Washington, D.C., where the person on the other end will not answer it. I think everybody will take a call from Senator Collins. She can get a lot of things done. She's respected. And the alternative there is our junior senator is somebody who's already picked a fight with the White House, if it's Janet Mills, or, you know, is like a Bernie Sanders, Bernie bro, you know, anti-Israel, whatever Graham Platner has decided is the most important thing to talk about today. And then, you know, what do we get if we make one of them the junior senator? We get Angus King as our senior senator. And I hate to tell you, but he's not exactly setting the world on fire either. So we would effectively have the weakest representation of all the 50 states if we had Angus King as our senior senator and somebody else as our junior senator.
Yeah, no, I shudder to think about that as the potential lineup, to have Angus King and Janet Mills, or Angus King and this socialist newcomer. I mean, it just... I can't imagine that eventuality. Hey, Jason, while I have you,
I'm trying to think of how to characterize Janet Mills for your listeners from Massachusetts, and I'm trying to think of how I can make Elizabeth Warren worse as a way of explaining it, because that's really, she's like a bad version of Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, it's quite the sight. Before I let you go, one of the texters wanted me to point out that the RSU 24 in the 2nd Congressional District just took a vote to keep boys out of girls sports. What can you tell us about the vote on that school board? And is there a trend of Maine schools trying to align with the president's executive order?
Yeah. Thank you to the person who sent the text. There is a trend. It's small, but it's growing. And, you know, in Maine, our schools are the center of our communities, really, in most of these areas. And Mainers, no matter what party, they have common sense. They understand biology, they understand science, and they understand reasonable actions. And so there are school boards that are aligning with the president's executive order, which really is also just aligning with the natural order. Janet Mills has been losing support and losing that fight in that side. But again, she's up against a guy who's saying the same thing as her, just louder. So.
Jason Savage, Executive Director of the Maine Republican Party. Keep us posted on how this primary is going. We'd love to have you back.
Thank you very much, Aaron. Have a good day.
Many of us think of Cape Cod as the place to be during the summer, but you know what? It's super special during the off-season, too. Especially if you're staying oceanside at the Nassau Beach Inn. Book your Nassau Beach Inn getaway today. Weekday rates from November through April start at just $199.99. Overlooking Nassau Beach, the Nassau Beach Inn is the only lodging available inside Cape Cod National Seashore. Every room commands a superb view of the great outer beach and the ever-changing sea. Nassau Beach Inn is pet-friendly, too, and each room is spacious with two queen-size beds. Off-season weekday rates from November through April start at just $199.99. This is an incredible value with only 13 rooms. Reservations fill up quickly. So book early at NassauBeachInn.com. That's NassauBeachInn.com. A short drive to a vacation far away. This is the Howie Carr Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne.
Follow Howie on TikTok.
We're looking at TikTok.
At Howie Carr Radio Network.
The name is hot. The brand is hot. Ow.
Howie Carr is back.
844-500-4242, the number here. for the Howie Carr Show. Press 1 if you want to chat with me. Press 2 for the Chump Line. Take all your calls for the Chump Line today. Let's make it a good one. 844-500-4242. Let's go to the phone lines and talk to Sean. Sean, you're on the Howie Carr Show with Aaron Chadbourne. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, Aaron. How are you?
Good.
I just wanted to say, you know, when you cover for Howie, I enjoy listening to you. I'm from Maine, up in the Old Town area. And I just wanted to say that a couple nights ago, my daughter was watching the Hunger Games with her friends. And I just wanted to let them know, like, and my, you know, a couple of my other kids were there. And I was like, this is like what the Democrats want to turn our country into. You know, the blue hair and the partying and all the working class is serving them, you know. So I just wanted to tell you I enjoy listening to you. And I thought of that the other day, and I try to educate my kids all the time. Like, you know, I don't want to scare them, but at the same time, I don't want to lie to them.
So, no, it's a good point, Sean. Yeah, thank you for pointing it out. And I think it is a dystopian tale that's about government power. And if you look at the culture and the cultural rot and kind of what they're portraying in the Capitol in that series, you see it reflected in a lot of society today, whether it's how people change their appearance or the fact that gender doesn't exist or any of these things. There's so much that I think is a good point going on there. 207 also wanted to point out that Janet Mills is not honoring the big, beautiful bill. Things like the no tax on overtime tips for seniors. I last week had Representative Katrina Smith on it. We talked about how Maine's made a decision not to conform to federal tax breaks. So they're not passing on the tax breaks on state taxes that they have on the feds. 917 points out they want to call the Maine governor, Janet Millstone, not just because she's older than the Flintstones, but also because she's dragged Maine down so significantly over the last several years. 844-500-4242. Next up is Tony. What's up, Tony?
How you doing, Aaron? Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. I mentioned to your call screener that I had lived in Maine from 78 to 82 in Waterville, Maine, and Mr. LaPage was the mayor at the time, became governor and a great Republican. And I'm just wondering, like, this Janet Mills, former AG and now governor and wanting to be senator in the U.S., to bring her socialist agenda to the U.S. Senate and to add. And the reason I'm concerned about this, Aaron, is that she was at the head of trying to have Quebec hydropower come into Maine from the Quebec province, where Quebec was selling hydroelectric power at under cost and charging Quebec residents even double and triple the cost that you would pay. But she's a person that's supposedly a socialist, a person worried about the environment. But at the same time, they destroyed the forests in Maine to bring these hydroelectric lines down. And she's more interested in talking about children that are boys playing in girls' sports and girls going into girls' dressing rooms than worrying about the environment and the impact on the environment. I just think that she would be a horrific senator for the state of Maine. She would have way too much influence on international trade with Canada if she would even get her hand into the hydroelectric transfer of power like in Vermont and in New York. And I would just say I have some concerns about the candidates. And I have mentioned at one time to Howie, there's a great family, the Laverty or O'Halloran family, that have been in Maine for a great time. Danny O'Halloran, who was a great friend of mine and Colby College graduate and a great businessman. I think that he would make an incredible senator.
All right, we'll watch on that one. I know that O'Halloran's are in the state legislature right now, so we'll watch for that. I don't know if I'm following the whole thing on the Hydro-Quebec. I think there were a lot of problems that a lot of people in Maine didn't like, particularly that, there was the deal that Maine was getting. It was all to benefit Massachusetts. I know that Paul LePage was instrumental in helping design the original corridor, so I don't know that Janet gets credit for or blame for all of that, but we'll talk more about it when we come back. This is the Howie Carr Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne.